Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Beyond the Cover. I'm your host, John Robb. I'm here with Jeff Ayers. Jeff, how you doing?
Doing fantastic.
And tonight we have a very special guest. Author Patrick Lee is in the house on the show talking about his book, Runner, and his newest book coming out in July called Signal. So it's going to be fabulous to talk to him. We also have a lot of other things we're going to talk about. We're going to be bringing up Thriller Fest, which goes on next week. We're going to have some interviews live from Thriller Fest, which we're going to play on the air. We already got some great guests lined up. Sandra Brown, Scott Turow, Joseph Fender. We got Hank Phillippe Ryan, David Morrell. I mean, just a great cast of people that you're going to hear some interviews that we're going to play clips here and on the show. But let's jump right in now to our guest. Like we said, he's the author of Runner. It is the first book that came out last year in his Sam Dryden series, and now Signal will be coming out in July. So, Patrick, how you doing?
Real good. Thanks for having me on.
So let's just jump right into it here real quick. Sam Dryden
sure,
is your character.
Good.
You had the first book, Runner, came out last year. The next book, Signal, comes out in just a couple weeks. So why don't you take readers back into Runner and now into Signal as we kind of go through into book two?
Sure, that sounds great. Yeah, so the first book, Runner, it sort of introduces this character, Sam Dryden, the guy that was in the military for a while, and when we meet up with him at the beginning of Runner, he's not really recovering from a really, really horrible personal tragedy that happened to him like 5 years before. So he's kind of a guy who just never really moved on. And so the story begins with he encounters this girl on the beach who's running away from guys who are trying to kill her. And that's never a good thing. So he helps her get away from these guys and finds out, he sort of helps her find out her memory has been pretty much blanked out by something that was done to her. So he helps her piece together her past and get away from these guys that are after her. And that story is actually sort of tied off by the end of Runner. I'm actually not sure if a lot of people know this, but the sequel doesn't have her in it. It's just sort of a separate story, something else that happens.
I was disappointed.
Yeah. I've been wondering if the YouTube comments are gonna be filled, or the Amazon reviews are gonna be like, wait, what the hell? This is supposed to be a sequel. I guess the idea with this series is that I want to have the books be each book stands alone within the series, so that people could read them in any order. So Dryden will be in all of them. Obviously, he'll be the main character, but. Yeah, it won't really, other characters probably won't, sort of carry over from each book to the next. So the new book, Signal, takes place 2 years after Runner, and it just kind of picks up. Signal is one of those books, it's hard to say anything about it without spoilers. But I guess we could just say spoiler alert here, and then if there's some...
Yeah, do it up. Dude, don't worry. No one's listening. Just tell them.
Yeah. I guess there's spoilers for the first few chapters, and then there are other spoilers later on. We could probably spoil the early part, I guess. One thing I would say about Signal, and I've noticed this lately, is that, it's like coming up on, there will be events, exciting events in the next month where I'll be reading it. And reading, sort of practice reading through that first chapter, it occurred to me that it's probably just about the darkest thing I've ever written. And I'm like, man, I didn't realize at the time what this would sound like if I'm just reading the one chapter, because if you've read the book, there was a reason to make it extremely dark. Here's the spoiler. The first chapter ends up getting completely, all the things that happen in the first chapter end up not happening because the main character is able to prevent certain things. The first chapter happens and it's horrible, and then we jump back in time 4 hours and we see the main character somewhere else, and he gets this sort of, a friend of his basically gets advanced knowledge of this thing that's going to happen, and they they stop it from happening. And it's this weird thing where the thing I kind of had fun with, where chapter 4 starts out sounding exactly like chapter 1, and that you just, it's like this carbon copy of it, but then you see where it diverges. And it was fun to do, but yeah, anyway, so at the time, the obvious, like, natural thing was to go ahead and make that first chapter really bad, because if, you know, you want people to want it to change. You want them to be relieved when it's different. But when you're just reading the first chapter to a group of people, yeah, I feel like I'll have to give them a disclaimer, like, just so you guys know, it's not really this bad. It's pretty heavy stuff.
Well, I have to say it was one of the hardest reviews I've ever had to write, because I didn't want to give anything away.
Oh, right. Yeah, I could see how that would be. That would be tough. It was a hard flap to write. I went back and forth on it with my editor, and we're all on the same page. You know, we're trying to entice people to read it without just telling them everything, and it was really hard to do. Needed a few drafts on it.
One of the things I love about your writing, and even going back to your original trilogy, which I'd love to have you talk about as well, you do genre blending very well. Could you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I guess it's just kind of a mix of all the stuff I've always liked reading. I've always really liked Stephen King, and then also he's just great, and it's just. Does authenticity so well, like no matter what's happening, you feel like these characters, I mean, he'll have crazy stuff, you know, like just in the Dark Tower series, the characters eventually meet Stephen King. Like these guys are just warping around through all these different dimensions.
Oh, but you know, that's a spoiler alert, because Jeff didn't make it through the first freaking three books because he didn't give a shit about the characters. So go ahead.
Good night, everybody.
That's a spoiler that's very late in the series. But, I think where I was going with that was just that with Stephen King, no matter what crazy stuff is happening, you feel like these characters are doing what people would actually do if this stuff happened. So, like, the Tommyknockers, you know, this woman finds an alien spaceship buried behind her house, and that's not likely to happen to you in real life, but if it did, this seems... All the ways that the people in the story respond feel very real. So I always loved that, and just the fact that he'll just throw anything at the characters and see what they do. As far as mixing other types of books, like I'm a really big fan of Lee Child, and read a lot of Harlan Coben. And so I'm not sure if there was really an intention to go. I'm not sure you can really decide what your style is, but you just sort of have certain influences that you really liked. So I try to write it really, try to keep the pace as fast as, say, like a Lee Child book. And then at the same time, just, you know, there's probably all these other influences from people like King and like Kuntz and other people.
So
you have a Twilight
question.
Zone influence as well.
Oh, what's it?
Twilight Zone influence, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Oh, did Dean Kuntz influence it? Sorry,
No, my fault. So, here we go. So fans that are just kind of finding out about you, though, fans that are like finding out about Patrick Lee and the books and this and that, give us a little idea if we were to sit down right now and Sam Dryden was on here being interviewed. Who is he? What would he say? How would he act?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure. It's hard to know sometimes what these characters would do in a normal everyday situation, because your job is to kind of throw them into these horrible situations that you hope you yourself never have to deal with. It's like that saying, if something's a bad experience, it's a great story. Dredden in real life, if he was here, it's probably, I'm not sure he'll be able to talk about stuff, because almost everything he does, it ends up being something that he'd be like tried for treason if he actually revealed it or he just wouldn't want anyone to know where he is. But it's kind of tough. It's kind of cool. I always feel like it's cool if the main character is, if you feel like they would probably be a pretty normal person on a normal day. Like they don't, and maybe part of that is just relatability. You want the characters to be, you want the character, if the character is kind of a vehicle for the reader, then you want it to be one that they can actually, like, get into. I forget where I read this. I heard somewhere that they said that the reason that so many characters start out, at least in the first book, characters start out as people who are just really everyday, like, kind of nobodies. Like, you see this in movies a lot, like Luke Skywalker, and he's one of the ultimate characters. So he starts out as just this bored guy on a farm somewhere on this desert planet, or Neo at the beginning of The Matrix. They're all kind of based on King Arthur in a way, but it's the idea is that if the story is going to be a roller coaster, and if the main character is the vehicle, it has to start out holding still so that the reader can get in. And I just thought that was kind of a cool thing. It actually makes a lot of sense. But then when you're writing the second book, you don't know what the hell to do. What the hell to do.
That's funny.
Thanks.
What I love about your books is, as you said, you've got great characters, and your imagination is just so amazing to me because you go in places that I just don't envision at all, and that's so cool.
Perfect.
So I'm wondering, do you plot first or do you create the characters first?
Yeah, I actually really have avoided plotting, at least on paper. This is going back, actually speaking of Stephen King, the advice that he sort of gives in his book on writing is to really not plot at all. And you just, the idea, there's kind of, I think there's actually more to it than it sounds like. For as far as I can tell, the way that works is just if you're not going to plot things out and not try to outline it, it kind of forces you to choose the kind of stories that you could write without outlining it, which is just to say you try to find this really as interesting of a situation as you could think of, like what's something interesting to throw the characters into, and if you do that, you can kind of just find the story. So I'm not sure if this would work as well if I were trying to write something like, not that I would want to, but like spy thrillers or something, or like if it was a legal thriller, which I have no idea how to write because I don't know how the ins and outs of trial stuff. But if you were writing something really intricate, maybe you would have to outline it. But yeah, I think if you're more of if the stories are more like situational, all stories are. But if you're sort of writing it based on this big what if that you're having fun with, like what if there was a tunnel from another universe or something and just crazy alien technology is coming through it. That was kind of the premise for the first series that I wrote. And that was just pretty fun. You could kind of just go anywhere with it. And as far as outlining, although I would say this, what I end up doing sort of ends up, I would say it ends up being outlining in hindsight because you write a draft of it, but two-thirds of the way through the first draft, you have some idea about something that you think would be really cool, but it means you have to go back and change a ton of stuff in the first third or first two-thirds. So then you change all that stuff, and then you keep going forward again, and at some point you have a different idea, you go back and change things. And in the end, it ends up looking like you outlined it really in quite a bit of detail because there are so many things that you've gone back and set up. In a way, I guess it sort of is retroactive outlining. You still end up constructing a plot, but you just end up writing a lot of stuff that you don't use along the way. I'm not sure if that would be avoidable, though, because I just think if you never, I think even if I outlined, I would probably still make so many changes once I was actually writing the book.
Do you worry about the payoff, though?
As far as just like when you're setting something up and then having the payoff. I think I end up still doing that. Like for me, a lot of the times I'll end up finding, I'll sort of stumble onto an idea for what would be a fun twist that could happen near the end. And if it's cool enough, or if I like it enough that I think it's worth going back and changing a ton of stuff to set it up, then I end up doing it. So it sort of has this built-in sort of gauge as far as whether you end up changing things or not. In a way, you sort of think of the payoff first, and then you think of, like, well, what would I have to do on page 20 and page 50 to make this plausible at the end? It feels like you're writing it backwards, but you still mostly are writing forwards.
So Patrick, give us a little background here into the three books that you had in your Breach series, you know, exactly, you know, what they're kind of about and why you decided to kind of forego that when you jumped in with the new character and wrote Runner.
Okay, sure. Yeah, the original trilogy, I think when I was writing those, I wasn't sure at the time that I was going to end it with three books. I guess I could just describe the premise of it briefly, kind of the thing I mentioned that, yeah, it's basically about there's this place in Wyoming where there had been one of these like particle accelerators, like the thing at CERN. And this thing in the 1970s, when they first started it up, it just, you know, it catastrophically failed and created this, what they ended up calling the breach, this opening that leads somewhere. It's like a wormhole. And they never understood much about it because nothing could go through from this end. And nothing alive ever came through from the other side. But what comes through are just these little random, like, fragments of, like, alien technology, just random little machines, or even just things that just, you know, the equivalent of, like, you know, we don't really know. I mean, there's one of the characters' jokes that we might have actually tapped into a garbage chute from some alien civilization. But and the stuff that comes through is, as someone in the story says, whoever makes this stuff is as far ahead of us as we are ahead of Java Man. Like, and almost none of it makes sense. And some of it is just incredibly dangerous. I remember at the time thinking of, there was sort of an analogy that imagine if Java Man, you know, if Cro-Magnons or Neanderthals or any sort of early versions of humans, if they just somehow came across a bunch of crates full of 21st century technology, just out in the woods somewhere, and imagine them prying it open and trying to make sense of what they find. And like most of it would just, almost all of it would just be inscrutable, like a toilet plunger. Like they would never know what that was for, or a spark plug or something. And then I thought, well, you know, God help them if they find hand grenades, because the learning curve is very steep with those if you don't know what they're for. I think a lot of that trilogy was based right around that metaphor. Like, what would it, you know, just how dangerous would some of this stuff be? I mean, some of it is just, yeah, just, and if you don't know what it does. So, the stories tended to revolve around one or two of these objects, like the things that we did have some understanding of how to use. It was actually a lot of fun. Just, I think the reason I decided to end it was just that the problem was with those books, not so much a problem, but those really were books that you had to read in order, and that each story connected into the next. And
gotcha.
I think I might have painted myself into a corner at some point. I mean, I just really, with each new book, you have to explain the past, you know, the previous book, or all of them. It's like previously on Lost kind of thing.
Oh, God.
After a while, it's like with each book, there's more of that. And obviously, people have managed to do it. I mean, there are series out there that are 7 or 10 books long. I think by the end of the third book, I just really, for one thing, it seemed like there was a great way to end it that I really liked. And so there was that. And, yeah, I really wanted to sort of write a series where the books were separate from each other. You could just, each one was its own compact or its own sort of discrete story.
Well, I love those books, by the way. Loved them.
Oh, thanks. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious. Is there a book that you wrote before The Breach? Because The Breach is your first book. Did you write before that?
There were kind of, in a way, there were. I mean, it's kind of a long story. There was a book I wrote before The Breach that I ended up using some of the structure of that book to create Runner. So, and Runner is in part based on something I wrote. Runner is sort of based on the first thing I wrote that was actually a complete novel. But almost all of it ended up being really different by the time I was done with Runner. So, that was actually a complete book with, I think the ending was, I mean, it was very different. Like, by the end, I think the bad guys were, like, controlling the weather or something like that. And, like, the whole world is, like, just being destroyed by, like, these out-of-control weather systems. And I remember coming back to it years later and saying, well, I liked some of the stuff, like, but, the girl being able to read minds was still sort of the centerpiece of the story. But yeah, I think once you have the bad guys like doing anything that's too, I don't know, like James Bond meets something. almost anything can work, but if you have to, like, if that's the story, it has to be like the Avengers. Like, there has to be something where it fits with what, you know. And if it has to, the good guys and the bad guys have to have equal capabilities, I guess.
Well, what was your path to getting Breach published?
Oh, the pathway to that. With the Breach. So what happened was that. So I wrote that first book, the one that. Never saw the light of day. But I did actually manage to sign with an agent with that one, with Janet Reed. And so, the book, it just, based on the response from publishers that saw it, it sounded like they liked the writing, but they just weren't sure how to change, how to make that story into something that that they could really do anything with. So, but a lot of different, a few different publishers seemed to be interested. And then at some point, I'm trying to think of exactly how it went, but I know that at some point, someone was asking, do you have ideas for something else, or are you starting something else? And so I think I was about 100 pages into the first Breach book at the time, and I thought, I can show them this, I guess. And they really liked it, so... they actually got back pretty quickly, and they offered just a deal for that book and whatever the sequel was going to be. So that was pretty surprising. Actually, at the time, I didn't really know that was even possible. So like, yeah, we'll take that one and whatever's next. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. So and that was HarperCollins, and so that was that was actually a pretty good day. It was just out of the blue, like, oh wow, I wasn't aware that they were going to make an offer on a book that wasn't done yet.
Well, that's kind of exciting, though. I mean, to kind of get into that realm of, just off of an idea. They must have really thought that there was something there, though.
Yeah, I think they could probably see the potential for it as a series. I'm pretty sure I sent it to my agent, and she sent it to them. But I'm sure that I know there was some kind of a cover letter that sort of said, there will be at least a few of these. And sort of exploring this idea of, just what people would do with this endless supply of, sort of impossible alien technology.
So, Patrick, now that you've kind of written in a different genre, and now that you're writing more of the thriller, and you had kind of written more in the science fiction part, when you're writing a thriller, and now you're going from Runner to Signal, and like you said, you're doing on the third book, what is something that you, as an author, want to make sure that you work on? Because every author's kind of have weaknesses. What's something that you always try to make sure that you work on to try to get better into the next book?
Yeah, that's a good, really good question. I think there's, and I know there are lots of little things that
I asked a very good question. Jeff, did you hear that? He didn't say that shit about your questions. Understood.
Oh, yours are great too. the funny thing is that. On a day-to-day basis, the things I obsess on are like these really fine-grained details. Like, I wonder if I'm using the same little phrase too many times in the book. So like someone will ask the main character a question, and I'll write this phrase: Dryden thought about it or Dryden thought about it for a moment, and then I'll have the dialogue. And at some point, I'll actually go through and like do like a control F for that phrase, and there's like way too many. and I'm like, wow, I have to get rid of a bunch of these. But I sort of generally do that with a lot of things. As I'm writing a book, I sort of have this running list that I'm jotting down of things that I want to make sure to check on. Like, I'm usually paranoid that I'll have the characters, I'll accidentally use the name of the characters from the last series at some point. So I do a control F search for that. It's a pretty amazing, pretty handy use of Microsoft Word to be able to just instantly check for mistakes that you at least might make. That's a detailed thing. As far as a more broad thing, it's hard to know. I mean, you're sort of always fighting to make sure it's like you're just going like the plausibility. That's always the thing you want to. I'm always trying to make it feel like even though the things that are happening are just impossible. It's, you know, stuff that would never happen in real life. I'm always trying to make sure that it feels like this is how, you know, if it did happen, this is how it would go. And try to refrain from having it feel like cartoonish, I guess. And it feels like first drafts almost always have more of that. And when you read through it again months later, you're like, wow, what was I thinking? Like, this sounds crazy. And you try to find the more, the sort of
right.
More refined version of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, we got about 30, 45 seconds left. So what I want to do is kind of give you the last word to kind of let everybody know how they can get in touch with you, your website, your social media stuff, all that fun information.
Oh, sure. Cool. Yeah. So, my website is patrickleefiction.com. It's like all one word. And I don't update that as nearly as much as I should. So, but I'll try to be on that. But probably the thing that I update most is my Facebook page. And that's just, you know, that's facebook.com/ Patrick Lee Fiction, all one word. And that would have been a good answer to the last question. Now, what do I need to work on more? Probably social media.
Work on your website.
Yeah, and Facebook and Twitter. I really need to do that more. But it probably involves getting faster at writing the books, so I have more time to do it. But something I'll work on.
That's all right.
Well, Patrick, we want to thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure to have you. Can't wait to
so
see you in a week at Thriller Fest. Yeah,
that'll be fun.
Thriller Fest in a week. Yeah.
Awesome. This is great.
So,
it's good talking to you guys.
All right. It sounds good.
Yeah,
I've
been control left.
Sorry. Yeah, he's been control left. Yeah, we asked
all
him.
My questions,
so,
control left.
All right, dude. We will talk with you soon, Patrick. You have a good one.
Cool. See you guys soon. Thanks again.
All
thanks
right,
so much.
So again, everybody, that is author Patrick Lee. Go to patrickleefiction.com for more information on the book Runner and then the new book coming out, Signal, the second in the Sam Dryden series. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with some reviews, some books we're reading, and we're going to talk a little bit about what we're going to do at Thriller Fest and what's going to go on. But first, we have to let you know that this month, this radio network and all the shows is brought to you by New American Library, the publisher of the most provocative thriller of the year called Eenie Meenie by M.J. Arledge. Lisa Gardner calls it mesmerizing, and Tammy Hogue says it's white knuckles guaranteed. That book is on sale now wherever books are sold, so make sure you check out Eenie Meenie by M.J. Arledge, another author that will be at Thriller Fest. So here we're going to take a break, and then we will be back in just a couple minutes. So in the meantime, we'll let you listen to a little of this.
shared the stage with major names, and now I finally hit my eye.
So welcome back, everybody, after the break. We want to welcome you again to Beyond the Cover. Of course, I'm your host, John Robb. We are here with our co-host, Jeff Ayers, as always. So, Jeff, let's just jump into our segment of what we normally do, which is what's on your shelf and what's in your hand. What are you reading, my man? What's going on?
I've got a couple I want to mention, but first, because Patrick is no longer here, his book Signal is one of the best books I've read this year.
Oh, so, and that's coming out
I didn't
in
want
July.
To say that in front of him. July
7th. Oh, you didn't want to give him a
Get
big
it.
Head?
It's good.
Well, and if people
yeah,
know
exactly.
Patrick,
you don't want to swallow
kind of
his head.
Very, and if people know Patrick like we do, he's kind of a very shy, kind of quiet guy. So it was good to kind of get him to open up a little bit on the radio. But if you said that, he might have just shut down.
Yes.
He might have been like, and then we just would have had dead air for like 10 minutes. So that was good that you probably didn't say that. All right.
There's a book that's coming out tomorrow. It's by Gail Linz, who I love her books. And her new book is
Ooh,
The Assassin.
Let me guess. Yes, The Assassin.
Yes. Yes. She is, as I say in my review, she is a master of the modern Cold War spy thriller.
And for people who don't know, real quick, Gail, give Gail's background a little bit, because she hasn't written a book in quite some time. So give her background just a little bit for people who don't know Gail, because when you say the Cold War master, maybe tell them how she kind of got into this gig, you know?
She was writing spy thrillers for a while and doing very well, and she creating the Covert One series of books with Robert Ludlum.
Robert Ludlum, that's the man, the guy who did the Bourne series, everybody,
man.
In case you want to know.
Yes. And she's been writing these phenomenal novels, and it's been 5 years at least since her last one. It's been a long time. So
I think was that the Book of Spies, I think, was the last one she wrote?
Yes, mm-hmm. Which was also terrific.
Yeah.
This
okay,
one
so gonna,
is, well, I the review, here's just my review. The duplicity begins as six master assassins rob a Baghdad museum to recover money owed to them by Saddam Hussein. Judd Ryder has given up the spy game, but that changes when he arrives at his home one evening to see a man who looks like him leave his residence and get hit by a car. Who was the intended target, Ryder or the stranger? His retirement is over. And the six assassins each hold a piece of a priceless limestone tablet, and they begin to turn on each other. Ryder and CIA trainee Eva Blake become targets because they were the last ones to see the elusive killer known as the Carnivore, and he has several pieces the others are seeking. It's believed they know the Carnivore's hiding place. Personal feelings have to be pushed aside, and enemies will be forced to work together if they're going to find answers and survive. Linz keeps readers guessing, and the end result feels like several novels bound together in one terrific package. The fast-paced and twists are in abundance, but the sheer complexity of the narrative forces readers to think while enjoying the ride. Treachery, double crosses, and a treasure straight from history add up to a thrilling novel. So that was my review of that.
Nice. Nice. Now, who did you write that one for? Was that AP?
It was AP.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
And she's great.
Yeah, obviously, I loved it. She is. And she's also one of the co-founders of International Thriller Writers. So, which we're going to be talking about here in a minute. Yes.
Yes. So what else you got? You got another one, I think? I think you got two, right?
Yeah. The other one I'm going to just mention briefly is I'm reading Brad Thor's new book, which is called Code of Conduct.
Yeah,
and,
that's a good one, too.
Oh, heck yeah. He knew it was only a matter of time before he was going to tackle viruses. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I remember interviewing Brad a couple years ago, and he had kind of hinted that that was something that he was kind of getting into. And so he's a great guy. I wish we could get him back on. He's just so difficult to get a hold of because you kind of have to go through his publicist. But we should try to see if we can get him on, talk to him.
Okay, yeah, definitely. He'd be fun to chat with. I like his stuff a lot.
Oh, he's one of the I always have like Mount Rushmores in genres. Like when you're talking horror, you know, I always put Stephen King in there. But when you're talking like military, thriller, political, I have Brad Thor in there. Now, I know some people will probably say, well, he's kind of a young guy. What about, you know, some of the older ones like the John LeClair or the Clancy's and stuff? But the one thing about Brad Thor books that I love is when you're reading a scene and let's say there's like three or four people like in a meeting or whatever and they're kind of talking about what's going on, you literally actually feel like you're in there watching. Like you're literally in the room watching and you can hear their voices talking. And to me, that's a very difficult thing to do. And he does a wonderful job with that.
He makes you feel like a fly on the wall.
Yeah. And I think that that's a very hard thing to do, but man, it's fantastic when he pulls it off.
Yes.
So you got anything else?
What have you got? No, what do you got?
Well, here's what I got. For the last couple of weeks, I have to admit, I've not been reading any fiction. I've kind of gotten off a little bit. I said yesterday, I told you off the air that yesterday we went to Barnes & Noble, and I actually went and I picked up a book called The Rise of the Roman Empire. And it's not a fictional book. It's a non-fictional book. It's a history book, and I started reading that one. I just got off the fiction trail a little bit. But the new issue of the magazine comes out tomorrow, and we got like 22 pages of reviews. So what I'm going to do is just going to pick out a couple of the ones that we have in here, because if anybody doesn't really know the magazine, when we put a review in the magazine, it will always be positive. We don't write negative reviews. Not that there's books that we do not like, but we don't write negative reviews. We just simply tell the author or the publicist, I'm sorry, but we cannot write a review. So when you see books that are in here, you know that you're not going to get a bad one. You're going to see books in here, and you're going to be like, oh, who's this, and you're going to read, and you're going to see what the book's actually about and what we think of it. But if it's in here, it's a book you need to read. One of them, of course, is J.T. Ellison, What Lies Behind. Her books are always good.
Ooh, love
she
it.
Hit this one out of the park. Kate White, who I had interviewed for the radio show, had The Wrong Man. She's got a lot of great books, of course. A couple other people, William Lashner has a book out called Bagmen that we highly recommended. I mean, you know, there'll be reviews that are really high, and then there'll be some that we just say is good. So you got to kind of look. These are kind of the ones that we've kind of like have up high. Christina Dodd with Virtue Falls is another great book. Rivas Wortham, The Man in the Cowboy Hat. If you ever go to an event and you see a guy in a cowboy hat, it's going to be one of two people. It's going to be CJ Box, or it's going to be Rivas Wortham. Okay? So that's what you're going to find. And Vengeance is Mine in his latest book, and that's his Red River Mystery series. And it's, if you like Longmire, like the Craig Johnson stuff, this is the guy for you when Craig's not writing something, because Rivas is kind of in that same genre. And I love Craig stuff. And I'm so glad that Longmire got picked up by Netflix and the show's going to continue, because I only watched about four or five shows, and that is one of my favorite. And, in fact, my other show that I'm going to watch, that I watch, is coming on tonight, the premiere of Under the Dome, baby. It's back tonight. I'm so excited.
Oh, there you go.
What's that? and then the other one is The Devil's Game by Sean, and I think it's Sharecover, or Sharecover. But it's The Devil's Game.
Sharecover.
And that's another great one. Sharecover. Joseph Fender, who we'll talk a little bit about, he has a book out, and his other one called The Fixer. Matthew Palmer, that is the son of Michael Palmer. His book is Secrets of State. That's a high-intensity thriller, kind of not really in the genre of his father, but you can see a little bit of his father in him when he writes. And so that's another one. And then, of course, the last one I'm going to talk about is The Breaking Point by Jefferson Bass, a guy that was on Crime and Science Radio. And if you want to know about dead bodies and those types of stuff, then you read Jefferson Bass, because you'll know more about dead bodies than you ever really wanted to know about dead bodies by reading one of his books. So that's what I got going on. Yeah. And like I said, the magazine comes out tomorrow, so people can watch for that. But the other thing is,
I should mention,
Go ahead.
Let me mention something to you first. You were mentioning things like that. Galley, which is a service for reviewers and also librarians and people like that, they actually did an interview with some of us for they basically wanted to interview authors and reviewers together. Myself, Bruce Dis, John Land, and Miles Knapp. And it's on their site now. So if you go to blog.netgalley.com, you can see our interviews. It's pretty nice.
And Bruce, we've interviewed before. Miles Knapp, we've actually, Suspense Publishing publishes. Of course, John Land is just one of the outstanding guys in the business, if people don't know who that
Absolutely.
Is. Then I
get control F, so there you go.
Now, did they interview you via blog, or was it over the phone and then they typed it up? How was the interview done?
It was done with just basically email, and then we answered everything, and then it looked pretty.
Gotcha. That's cool.
They did a nice job.
Now, we're going to be at Thriller Fest next week, this is another reason why, because we're taking kind of the month of July off. I'm going to update the website, which is suspenseradionetwork.com, but we're kind of off the month of July, and then we'll be back because both Jeff and I will be out at events. We're going to be at Thriller Fest next week. I leave Monday. We get there Monday night. You already be there. I think you leave, Sunday? You're going to be there Monday?
That's correct. Yeah.
And then both of us leave the following Sunday on July 12th, and then we go to PNWA in Seattle, where we're going to spend a little some time together, and we're going to PNWA in Seattle that week. So then that's why we're not going to be on the air. It's just too much to do. One idea that we had that we're going to do at Thriller Fest is we're going to get a lot of these authors, trying to get like 12 or 13 authors, and just do like 15 or 20-minute little quick snippets of you know, their experience and their book, and just be able to bring them to you. And just do it real quick, and then we'll play them on the shows, you know, as we come up. And like we said, one of the things we have is we have Sandra Brown and Scott Chereau and David Morrell and John Land, Hank Philip P. Ryan, Joseph Fender. So we got some great ones already, and we'll get more as we get on there. I'm going to try to grab Kathy Reichs and going to try to grab, you know, Nelson. Well, we already had Nelson DeMille, but Kathy Reichs is another one that I'm going to try to get. So we're going to try to do all that. But Thriller Fest in general, I don't know if people understand. The one confusion that people have, and I'm going to let you explain this. Break it down, Thriller Fest. When the event really starts kind of on Wednesday and kind of ends really Saturday night with the awards, I don't think there's much going on Sunday. So kind of break it down how Thriller Fest goes to people, because it's kind of broken down in three or four different sections.
That's true. It starts with it starts Tuesday for some people, where they have sort of a writer intensive day where you spend the full day with an author.
Master. That's right. I remember that now.
They
new.
Just started doing that.
They did that last year for the first time, wasn't it?
Yeah, this is the second year.
Yeah, okay.
So
that's a great thing.
You do that. Oh, it is. And some of the biggest names that go to this thing do that, and that's just, man, a phenomenal. Wednesday is the first day of what's called Craft Fest, and that's where authors teach the craft of writing. And that is worth the price of admission right there. And it's just, you learn a ton of stuff. I'm amazed at the stuff I learn every year at these things. Thursday is the continuation of Craft Fest, followed by what we're calling Career Fest this year. And that is the business side of writing. So you've sort of published your book, now what? What do editors look for? How do they work? What do agents look for? What do you need to do to make this as a career, not just, you know, one book and I'm done sort of thing?
Right.
And then we have what's called Pitch Fest, and that's an opportunity for writers wanting to fulfill their dream to sit in front of an agent for 4 minutes and pitch their work. And think speed dating, but with agents.
Or
with editors.
Or they can sit in front of me, because I'll be there listening to pitches for Suspense Publishing.
That's right.
And we signed a couple authors from last year, just so people know. We did sign a couple authors, and their books will be coming out very shortly. So it does work, just so you know.
There's major success stories that have come out of this. Simon Gervais, Boyd Morrison. Yeah, it's just amazing. So it does work. And I am a door captain with Patrick Lee, so come say hello if you're a listener. And, yeah, please, and say hi to John as well. I know he'd love that.
Oh, yeah.
Then the Thriller Fest part happens, and that starts on Friday and Saturday. And that's more of the author panels and more designed for fans of the thrillers.
A little bit more
laid
back.
So here's an opportunity for you to meet. Yes. Opportunity for you to meet and greet your favorite authors. And
right.
When I say that, I mean you're walking down the hall, and a perfect example for me is I ran into Ken Follett one year and had a 20-minute conversation with Ken Follett in the hallway.
And yeah, nice.
Unbelievable. Amazing guy, and I was such a huge fan, and it was surreal. It really was. All the authors that come to this are approachable and friendly and nice. And I look forward to this every single year. It is so worth the trip.
Yeah.
And then we're going to turn around, and like we said, we're going to go to PNWA, which is a little bit different on the West Coast in Seattle. But they don't have the craft part there, but they do have the pitch part, and they do have the panels, and I'll be teaching a class there, and I'll be taking pitches. And you're going to be my moderator for my pitch class. So we're going to kind of tag team this together is what we're going
to
do.
Looking forward to that.
We could say Beyond the Cover goes live at PNWA.
We could.
Okay.
But I have a great idea. Well, I got to talk to you off the air about how I want to start the class off. So I'm going to talk to this over there because I don't want anybody – because it's going to be a surprise. And I want people to kind of – I want this to have fun. I want people to laugh, and I want people to – when they're done listening to me, I want them to get up and run to their computers and start writing. So that's the – those are my goals, and I'm going to tell them that. Hopefully it works. And if it doesn't, then it doesn't. But hopefully it does.
What I want to say about PNWA is it's designed for – writers, period. So it's more about Craft Fest, the whole conference.
Yeah.
Be it panels, be it classes. Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that if you are an aspiring author, and you think you might have it down, and there's a good thing and a bad thing. We've talked about this before. Is that what Amazon has done? And I'm just going to mention Amazon because they were the first to kind of really start it. Is that you? It is a great thing for an author to be able to write a book, kind of do their thing, upload it, and start selling it immediately. You know, I mean, it's right there, boom, done. But the problem is this. What authors like that do that don't understand is whether or not, you know, you get these rejection letters from the publishers or from the agents, and there's a reason. The reason is because you haven't done the one word that every author has to do. You haven't edited it. There's no editing. That's something that you have not done. You need to make sure that you edit your work. And that's the problem, I think, that we find in a lot of these books. So if you want to go to Craft Fest and learn from these writers that sell millions of books and have sold multi-millions of books, then it's an investment in your career. Or basically don't take it seriously. Throw your book up on Amazon and wonder why you sold 5 copies. About all I can
say.
You know.
Well, and then the idea behind what we want to do, well, we want to do this as a career because no one's going to read you after that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like having a shitty album if you're a musician. You know, you can go in the studio and just throw something out there and you have the one hit, but all the other 9 songs in the album suck. So you got the one radio hit, but you're not sustainable. You know, you're not going to do anything. You're not going to make it. You're just going to be forgotten. It's going to be off the shelf. You're never going to make album number 2, just like you're never going to make book number 2. And you just, you know, so yeah,
this is for a career. This is for serious people, people that you really want to, you know, you want to have serious. And I think it's a great idea. And I love how you guys, how it keeps expanding into these different things. Because Career Fest was only a couple of years ago. Pitch Fest hasn't been around since the beginning. Craft Fest is another something that, you know, hasn't been really at the beginning. So the event keeps expanding and getting better. And the thing about the Pitch Fest is, are you going to be involved? I think Shannon's going to be involved in, like, the pre kind of Pitch Fest thing. I don't know what that's called.
Oh, no.
I'm not going to be involved.
Since I'm one of the door captains, like, it's at the same time I'm getting my training to make sure all the agents and everybody's happy.
Okay. But now, what's that called? Like, pre-Pitch Fest? Or I'm not really sure. The schedule's on. It's up online. It's called thrillerfest.com. And you click on the schedule, and you'll see, oh, my God, Steve Barry teaching a class? Yeah. David Morrell teaching a class? Yeah. You know, Nelson DeMille? Yeah. They're teaching classes. The actual authors, you know, you actually see them and you'll hear them and you're able to talk with them. And, you know, they're there telling you how to freaking write. I mean, that's like Warren Buffett sitting down at your computer saying, no, let's start picking stocks together. Who the hell wouldn't want that?
And I'll let you in on a secret about the Thriller Fest. They record
okay,
all the
on, sessions. Hold on. Let me mute the audience. Okay, what's the secret?
They record all the sessions. So
there you go.
It's oh my God, I cannot tell you how many times I've listened to classes from some of these folks over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been so insightful and helpful to me personally that it's amazing. Yeah.
I think what we're going to try to do is the guy who does it, and I'm going to see if we can get the okay, because I know he sends you all of everything to be able to do, but to be able to play like 5 or 10 minute clips, you get an idea of what it is. So you kind of get an idea of what it's like. I'm not going to play the whole thing because, you know, he wants you to buy it. You should buy it. But
right.
Play like a 5 or 10 minute clip so you get an idea of what it is. And it's not that expensive. And you don't need all of them. I mean, I think if you get all of them, what is it, like $300 to get the whole freaking thing? Which
you don't want all of them.
Really?
You don't want all of them. Trust me on that one.
Not all of them, but the thing is that you can pick and choose, but, you know, we'll play little snippets and we'll kind of, you know, let people know what's going on. Hopefully people will like mine at PNWA. You know, they'll like what we do. Hopefully they will. Like I said, it's going to be a little bit entertaining. I'm going to make you laugh. Hopefully I don't make you cry. But if I do, hell, that's not that either. And we'll see what we do. But it's going to be, we're kind of putting this together. I believe I sent it over to you. You got my little script, my little outline of what I'm going to hit, right? Did I send that to you yet?
Yes. It looks great.
So those are the things I'm going to hit. Whether I do an order, have some audience. The big thing is we're going to have audience interaction. So anybody who's going to be there, you could just be called on for the hell of it. I'm doing this class again. I was asked to do it at the 805 Writers Conference, which is out here in Ventura, on Halloween weekend, and I'll be doing this in front of over 200 people. And the scary part, the 200 people, or me at the front of talking to 200 people? But I'll be doing this in front of 200 people. Yeah. And I don't know how many people I've ever talked in front of. I don't care if it's, to me, it could be 1 or 200. It really doesn't make a difference because you're just talking. I don't care how many people there are. Like when we do panels, we probably get a good 60, 70 people in our panel. We'll probably have about that many this year, I would think, right? Because we're doing a panel.
I would agree.
Thrill with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we always have fun
doing
that.
And I'm moderating three. Yeah.
Yeah, you're moderating a freaking massive one, too. You got Sandra Bryan and Scott Chirill, I believe, on the panel right after we interview them.
And also R.L. Stein, David Morrell, and Clive Cussler.
Oh, yeah. Nothing
I'm
like,
terrified.
You got a couple guys on that.
Yeah,
I'm just going to go. I'm just
going to
heckle you in the background. Yeah. I'm
okay.
Just heckle you in the background. I'm just going to stand up there and just be like, Jim, I know you, dude. What's up? You're the most famous guy up there. Yeah. So I'll do that shit. But yeah. But hey. Well,
that'll go
we're just
well.
Running out of time. So why don't we end this fun right now? And again, make sure you check out suspenseradionetwork.com. I'm going to update it with the next show time. We don't have guests lined up yet, but we're going to work on that. We'll probably get a lot of guests from Thriller Fest, which is probably why we really haven't really gotten anybody, because we're going to have so many requests.
We have a guest.
Well, did I forget? Who the hell did I forget?
Yeah, when we come back in August, our first guest is Kevin O'Brien.
Oh, that's right. Why do I, every time we talk about guests, I always freaking forget Kevin O'Brien.
And he is awesome.
He's going to kill me. I know, he's going to kill me when he sees
he
me.
He will. He will.
I know. He literally will. I'll probably be on the cover of his book, because his book covers are, like, fascinatingly horror. I love it. so, yeah, that's right. Kevin O'Brien's when we first come back. And that's going to be, what, the first? I think that's, like, the first thing in August. But like I said, I'll check that out, and we'll get it all done. And we'll get it up on the website. And for all the shows, we're going to have everything done. Everything's going to have a hiatus from this point forward. Until we get it all up there. And I think the first show is probably going to be like the end of July, maybe around the 29th. I think the Story Blender comes back on first, so check that out. So, Jeff?
We're back on the 10th. We're back on the 10th.
On the 10th, okay. So we're going to see
August 10th.
You, my man. August 10th, that's how long away we are?
Yes.
Shit. That's a break. All right. Well, hey, I'm going to see you in a week. We arrive Monday night, but we arrive like 8 o'clock at night, so we probably won't be there until Tuesday morning. We'll be over there, so we'll probably see you then Tuesday. So until
Sounds
then.
Sounds awesome.
All right,
it.
Everybody. Again, make
sure you say hi, listeners,
site.
Please.
Yes, and remember, while we're on break, all shows, regardless if it's Beyond the Cover, Crime and Science Radio, The Story Blender, Inside Edition, One-on-One, all are available to listen on demand. Get it off iTunes if you want to. Subscribe to it. It gets right into your podcast, right into your iPhone, whatever you listen to. Or you can just go to blogtalkradio.com/suspensemagazine, and you can find everything that you want there. And all the shows are there to listen and do what you got to do and have some fun. So until next time, Jeff, we will see you later, my man, and we will see you in a week.
Looking forward to it, and thanks, everybody.
And like we always say, keep reading. Until next time, bye-bye.